and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1. Hi, this is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1. Pleasure to have Morgan Harper with us today. She was the Progressive Democratic Party candidate in the congressional primary. And we hope to hear more from her in terms of public policy and hopefully a future run. A lot of stuff happening in Columbus, Morgan. Any thoughts? Some people want to recall the mayor, and you appeared to be on that list. Should we recall Andy Ginther?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Bob. There's definitely a lot going on right now, including the recall effort. I mean, you know, just speaking as someone who's been out going to the protests and different actions that have been happening since late May, I mean, in some ways, it feels like people are responding to not seeing action coming from our elected officials and from those who hold a lot of political power on the issue of policing, but then also a lot of other things that have been going on in the city and just, you know, that have been affecting people and particularly the Black community. So, one, I'm glad to see that people are hitting the streets and are open to exercising their right to speak out and demand more from our elected officials and ultimately from our government and ourselves. On the recall Ginther effort, you know, just to give people background, they're trying to get 15,000 signatures by July 9th, which would then trigger that recall issue being on the ballot in November. And the voters would then have a choice to say whether or not they think that Mayor Ginther's leadership has met the moment that we find ourselves in, but also if he's the leader to advance on a lot of these issues moving forward. And if that were to be the case, that the voters were to vote in favor of that, then it would trigger a special election. So just to give people more context, but you know, I think it's an excellent exercising of our democratic right to reflect on the quality of our leadership. A lot has changed in Columbus over the last few months, and we should have a moment to say as a community whether or not our current leader is the leader that's going to usher in a new era of accountability for the city.
Yeah, which to some extent what's odd, and again, my own background, for more than 30 years, I showed up on Columbus Day and other days and demanded the statues come down. And nobody ever expected it would move this quickly. And again, is Ginther is acting like Democratic and other leaders of this city, right? Where they don't really reach out to the community. They don't change quickly. But it seems like people out there want change and they want it now. So from your perspective, what the hell's happening? It's sort of issues that were considered fringe and on the back burner. Now you've got, you know, leaders of the cities attempting to, you know, respond in some limited way or to remove things like the Columbus statue. Are we in a special moment in history? It sure seems like we're moving quick.
I think we are. And, you know, talking to people in the community and especially older folks, I mean, that's what I'm hearing from other people too, who have had that experience like yourself that have been, you know, working on these issues for a while, is that this does feel different. One, that it's not just a moment. Like I mentioned, you know, these protests and actions have been happening since late May. And so just like the level of how long they've sustained themselves. And now they're morphing into different types of event, educational events that are happening to give people background on the issues of, you know, thinking about a community that is less focused on policing itself and more focused on supporting each other and leading more stable lives. So I do think that that's distinct. I think just the diversity of people who are showing up and speaking out is quite unique for this movement, that we not only have Black people that are saying, we're not going to take this anymore. We're not going to live like this anymore. But also a lot of white people, and particularly young white people, who are saying that we also don't want to live in a community where we have Black people and others who are threatened by the police, that we have systemic racism, and we're gonna hit the streets to demand change as well.
Well, many of these people out in the streets, Black, white, and other races and ethnic groups, many of them with no criminal records have been brutalized by the police. We here at the Free Press have been running a lot of video. So it seems one of the crucial issues for the mayor, whether he's recalled or not, is who in the hell controls the police in this city? I mean, they're now charging people. I had a couple cases at my law firm with fourth degree, rioting. And it's absurd. The videos are showing it's the police that are actually rioting. These are police riots, and it's a tactic to try and quash the movement. What would you do if you were a congresswoman or mayor of this city? What would you do in this situation? I mean, it looks to me like the police are out of control.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's been one of the interesting things, too, about when we're hearing from those in power that they have control or they don't, right? I mean, we now have the mayor saying in his press conferences that the reason why he's going to be vetting all communications coming out of the police department is because they report to him. Well, that's interesting, because there's been a lot of bad stuff that's been going on all this time, and it's kind of like passing the buck. Well, that's the police department, the police chief, the FOP, all of this. So if you're in control, then why haven't you been exercising that control over the past 20 years to rein in this department that has been brutalizing the Black community? And so I think that now shifts the burden to us in a way as the community, as voters, to say, well, do we believe what's happening now? And if it's all reactionary, just because there's more attention, there's video, there's the national attention, then can we really trust this leader to be the person who's going to truly do what's best interest in our best interest moving forward?
Yeah, his initial impulse was to show up with the police chief and stand strong with him. And now it looks like the people have moved him through protest in a different direction. From your perspective, policy-wise, what needs to be done with the police in Columbus and in other areas of the United States?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're hearing about a lot of different policy ideas, like civilian review board with subpoena power. That's good, that we need to have an ability to fire officers for their conduct that relates to the FOP conduct. But ultimately, the other thing to keep in mind here is a lot of these reforms and methods of reform have been done in other places, and we still see incidents of police violence. So that's where, I really think that we need to be looking at how we start to just involve armed officers in less of our community's activities. So for example, when someone's having a mental health incident, why do we have to have the first responder there be an armed police officer versus a mental health professional? There's a whole movement happening across the country to consider emergency first responder legislation that would open up the door for funding to allow health professionals, social workers, other types of people who meet the specific need of the community in that instance to be the first responder. So I think that's a really important step. And then ultimately, we have to look at the root causes of a lot of what's going on. Why, when there are violent incidents, well, is that stemming from some other type of unmet need in the community? Do we have young people that are having a hard time accessing good employment opportunities, the education system, all of this? It's all connected. And I think what we're really seeing through this movement that's happening again nationally, and also in Central Ohio, in our community, is people saying we cannot continue on with the way we have been doing things. We have to re-envision and then implement through policy a different type of society where everyone gets to lead a life of dignity, respect, and have the opportunity to live out their potential.
You're listening to WGRN 94.1, and we're talking with Morgan Harper. This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news, side of the news that is long overdue to talk about. For example, Why can't everyone get a sabbatical in this society and go back and be re-educated? And why don't we have guaranteed incomes? Because I think you're right, Morgan, that a lot of these problems really are rooted in the massive inequality in the society. What can we do about that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of why we're seeing the inequality is that this economy isn't set up for people to all be okay, right? There has to be a certain underclass, so to speak, of people who earn wages that are extremely low, who are doing two or three jobs and still not able to ever really get ahead in order to facilitate the type of wealth consolidation that has happened at the highest levels of our economy, and particularly among large corporations, for that to continue on. And so, you know, we really also need to be looking at policies that are going to facilitate the broadening of economic activity and opportunity across all types of people, not just in the largest corporations and those who run them. But in the meantime, I also am supportive, and you're seeing interesting in this movement right now, traction around ideas like UBI, universal income, that were seen as kind of fringe as well for quite some time. But I view them as a recognition. And this is a policy area I would get asked about a lot during the campaign, even from progressives, because it wasn't always like an idea that progressives would talk about. It was like, well, Morgan, like, are we really solving the root problem there, just like giving people money? It's like, well, perhaps not. But what we are acknowledging is that $400 shortfalls are derailing families here and leading to a lot of other issues around housing, health, mental health in particular. And we are in one of the richest countries in the world. So let's stop making people jump through a lot of bureaucratic hoops, particularly in this time of pandemic, and let's just give people enough money to be able to meet their basic needs. And in the long term, let's work towards an economy that actually enables everyone to be able to work in a way that supports a more stable life. But it's got to be a combination of things that we do in the immediate, and then also as we work towards some of these larger structural changes as well.
So where did you stand on the issue of the Green New Deal? Do we need massive works programs that pay living wages, like the Works Project Administration in the 30s or the Civilian Conservation Corps? Do we need to put people, particularly once this pandemic is over, because we may need different types of work during the current situation, but do we need a universal job program?
I think we do, because the other thing we're seeing right now is the economy has been a farce. I mean, the last 10 years of growth, for a lot of people, that growth has translated into jobs in the gig economy. Well, as we've seen over the past couple of months, those can get wiped out in a second, or jobs in the retail service sector. It's unclear if we have a path forward in the short term to even have restaurants operating at the level which they were operating before this pandemic, and they won't necessarily be able to generate the revenue to even sustain people in jobs that we already knew weren't paying them enough to meet their basic needs, right? So we need to be thinking much bigger. The market has failed us in many ways, and that we still see high levels of unemployment. And I believe something like a federal jobs program, if we already had that in place, well, then we'd be able to respond to these incidents more nimbly as well. We need more people in this health profession as we try to manage the public health emergency that we have, having people that can go out and do the contact tracing. So, you know, all of that you're starting to see in spurts, but it varies quite a bit across the country in different jurisdictions. And so having a federal program that acknowledges people need work, we have unmet needs, and we can pull these things together to pay people enough to live, and then also address some of the biggest needs of our time, including related to climate, building out infrastructure, and right now this public health emergency that we find ourselves in.
And what are your thoughts on the healthcare system itself? What would your policy preference be?
So I support universal healthcare. I was backing Medicare for All during the campaign. I believe that the healthcare industry is another example of consolidated corporate power that is not serving our needs, and healthcare is a human right, and it shouldn't be that just based on if your employer can afford to give it to you, or you know, if you are able to afford healthcare through the exchanges, that you are able to have coverage. And in I mean, in some ways, it's just been mind-blowing, actually, in this era of the pandemic to see how quickly these systems have fallen apart, how people are seeing employer-based healthcare, which is an anomaly, right? The fact that we have that as a country is an anomaly among other industrialized nations. And, well, what happens when you have mass job loss? Also a loss of benefits. So, so I really think that we need to move towards universal healthcare so that we can not only guarantee coverage for everyone, but also begin to control costs of pharmaceuticals. Because that's another thing that's coming up right now, just the costs of drugs that, you know, could treat people who become infected with the coronavirus, astronomical, talking about, you know, over $3,000 in treatment. And the main theme is, you know, we don't have to live like this. We don't have to live like this. And the fact that we've gotten comfortable, or we've had people in power who have been comfortable with so many of us getting left behind, or even those of us who maybe find ourselves in a comfortable position, but one shock away from getting off track, it's not acceptable. And I think people are waking up to the fact that we can organize and actually change our representation to get the different types of policies we need.
So it seems like one policy we need is universal testing for the virus itself. Why hasn't that happened? In New Zealand, they did it and pretty much were able to control the virus. What could we do to have universal testing? Who should do it? City, county, everybody?
Well, I think what we've seen in the management of the pandemic, I mean, it does start at the top, and I agree with that. So I think in this instance of national emergency, if we had someone in the White House who actually had any interest in making the case for how government could work to people's benefit, then, you know, that would put us in a stronger position. So getting rid of Trump is certainly a top priority, but then we also need to look at the fact that our healthcare system is not set up to incentivize preparing for public health needs, right? Hospitals don't make money off of stockpiling protective equipment. They make money off of doing a lot of expensive procedures. And so if we want to start to also be able to respond to these types of incidents that are, yeah, you know, perhaps this is once in a generation, but there are a lot of public health issues going on that we could be better prepared for, then we also have to start setting up systems that enable those services to be available at the community level. And the privatized health insurance industry is not the way that we get there. But in all of these factors, I mean, having a strong national plan from the federal government that can coordinate with states, with counties is useful. But another weak link there, and like we've seen in Ohio, is at the state level, that can break down in a federalist system, that if we have a state legislature or, you know, governor that is going to backpedal and stop prioritizing the direction of public health experts and instead give in to the business interests, then we are going to start to see, like, right, what's happening right now, the spikes in coronavirus cases. So yes, ideally we have leadership at all levels that is not driven by corporate interests and is putting people first. And I do think continuing to elect grassroots candidates is a way to get there that are eschewing corporate money during their campaigns.
Well, one of the things, your campaign in some ways was derailed by the pandemic. I mean, it seemed you had a tremendous amount of momentum, social media, raising money to be effective, and then you end up essentially not being able to campaign, and the election being called off at the polls and having to be rescheduled. Any thoughts on how we should conduct elections in the U.S.?
Well, I'm a big fan of automatic voter registration. That's one.
Okay, let's start right there. Is the election officials are required, it shall be their duty to register eligible voters.
Right, yes. And how about register eligible voters and also make sure people from all different parts of the population know how to vote? That's a part we forget about, right? You know, all the top line messaging, all the marketing, every elected official in the country is willing to tweet out, vote, it's your civic duty. And in the case that we saw during our primary election,
okay, great, I want to vote. Well, here are the steps for me to actually vote. I have to download a form or call a number to get a form sent to me that then I request my ballot. But wait a second, is this my ballot or is this my application? I need to have my own stamp to send that in to then get my ballot back. And oh yeah, there's this disease floating around that I might die from, but don't worry, I'm going to navigate this process. Oh, and I don't speak English fluently, but no one's going to help me with translation services either. So, you know, it really is a complete mess, but it's a mess that is designed to work exactly as it does do, which is to disenfranchise a lot of people who are working class and who we don't want, a lot of people don't want to fully participate in this system, because if they did, then working class people would have more political power and would vote corporate people out. So, I mean, I think that we need to recognize that voting in and of itself also has to be a grassroots effort of sorts. We certainly saw that in our campaign. We tried to do our best to put resources into enfranchising as many people as possible. But we have to actually demand that too from our elected officials, that, hey, you have the resources. We're the people, we're your constituents, serve us and make sure that, you know, we don't have to jump through as many hoops to be able to exercise our right to vote.
Well, I saw that more than 900 people in Franklin County didn't get to vote on their, or didn't get their provisional ballots counted because they weren't homeless or disabled. That is, they were sent the wrong ballot by the Board of Election and went to turn it in and vote in person. But there was, again, a law in Ohio passed by the Republican-dominated legislature, which said you couldn't vote in person provisionally. You were allowed to because it was federal law. They just didn't have to count them in Ohio unless you were disabled, again, or homeless. To me, that just seems like the intentional stealing of people's votes. I mean, is there some way we can fight that?
Well, I think the plans that are being discussed for November are somewhat better there. I mean, I think there is the consideration of preserving in-person voting. I think having all mail-in voting, I understood the need to postpone the election given just how new the pandemic was at that point. But the decision that was made that was supported not only by the Republican-dominated state legislature, but also by many Democrats to push for doing it on April 28th rather than June 2nd and preserving in-person voting, I think it was a mistake because for a lot of people, they're not going to be able to go through this process of voting by mail. It's confusing, like you're saying, the provisional ballot, do you qualify or not, versus just being able to walk up to your local polling place. So until we-
Well, they made people apply instead of just sending every voter a ballot, you had to apply. And, yes. You know, and many people didn't have the, you know, facilities to do that.
Yeah, it was really confusing. A lot of people I talked to didn't even know the difference between the application and the ballot. I mean, the only thing that made sense about the application to me is given the pandemic, I think a lot of people were changing their locations to write out the stay-at-home order. So, you know, good to know or have updated information about where to send your ballot. But under normal circumstances, or really any circumstances, it seems like you should be able to go online and request that and fill in the accurate address you want your ballot sent to, certainly not having to mail in a hard copy. But even better if you just mail out the ballot and people have enough warning that that's coming to make sure their address is up to date in the system.
Which the Secretary of State, LaRose, the Republican Secretary of State, and the voting rights group, that was their notion. Give everyone a ballot and you know, let them vote it. But that's not what happened. What do you hope happens in the fall?
In the fall, I hope that there is in-person voting, right? Because like I said, a lot of people, just the absentee voting process, even if they can figure it out, it's just very complicated. And so I think now we know enough about how to set up a voting location to have it be safe given the virus. And so I hope in-person voting is preserved and that we just streamline the application process. So, you know, it would be great if you could just go online and request it, but at a minimum, just having postage provided so that if you do have to send it in, people don't also have to look for a stamp.
Okay, so the notion of early voting, should we expand that, allow people to vote early? And should they be allowed to register and vote early at the same time?
Yeah, you know, if I had to speak in broad strokes, I guess I would say, I think we should make it as easy for people to vote as possible. The actual recorded instances of voter fraud are not very high. And so I'd much rather err on the side of enfranchising as many people as possible. If we can also, as a country, work towards voting as a day off to ensure that people are all able to do that, no matter what your job is, a paid holiday, that would be great too. But yeah, we just need to make it as easy as possible for people to vote. I think early voting is great, and certainly supportive of that, and not putting so many restrictions on, you know, the registration requirements as well.
So any last words? You got a minute left. Anything you want to tell the listeners on the other side of the news?
Yeah, I think I want people to know that we are living in historic times. It's a time that has been paved by many activists over many years. And so I want to first, you know, honor all of those who have gotten us to this point of a historic movement, but encourage everyone to recognize that we all have a role to play. And even if you can't be in the streets, just speaking out on social media is a part of this. Writing op-eds, donating to the organizations that are helping to bring people together, and ultimately doing whatever folks can to enfranchise your own personal network to go through the voting process in November. I really hope that on the other side of this, we get closer to a true democracy where the power is with the people, not to a political party, not to a political system that has been dominated by the influence of corporate money. And I'm excited for continuing that fight with everyone in Central Ohio.
Well, thank you, Morgan Harper. One struggle, many fronts. And Morgan has been on many of those fronts. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.